Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. When the conscience goes dead, a person quickly becomes a narcissist, totally absorbed in themselves. For those close to such a person, this makes life very difficult. Today, more on understanding the narcissist and what to do with one. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Now, Erwin Lutzer continues a series on the power of a clear conscience. Today, we'll hear more of message number 3, learning about the process of becoming that impossible person.
And the minute you think you've found a way to please him, you discover that the goalposts have moved. It's like kicking a field goal, and while the ball is in the air, the posts get moved farther back, so that you always lose. You are always criticized. You are always belittled, because it is the narcissist who's the center of everything that is happening, and everything should come out good and critical of everything, because if they ever approve of anything, that means that someone else has some good. And as a result of that, that's the way in which they live. If a narcissist walks into a room, he or she sees everyone else as competition. And what he has to do is to somehow diminish them, maybe through criticism of other people, maybe because of his presence, because, remember, a narcissist has to be the bride at every wedding and the corpse at every funeral. Everything needs to focus in on him. He has to be the center of attention. And so they feel uncomfortable when there's peace. They certainly feel uncomfortable when someone else is honored, because they think to themselves, that really should be me. After all, they're gods, maybe God with a small g, but they are gods, aren't they? Isn't that the promise of Eden? You shall be your own God. Well, I've been describing a narcissist, and I'm going to continue on in this description, because it seems to me that self-love standing at the head of this catalog of sins reminds us that it is really the seed of all conflict, that is the seed of everything else that follows. And of course, as a result of that, these folks have a cauterized conscience. And that's the point that I want to make. I preached a version of this message this summer. And the very next day when I was having breakfast, there were these couples eating at the table. And at one table, randomly, two couples, both of whom, whose children married narcissists, both of whom divorced their mates. And so they found this message very, very interesting. They said, I know exactly what it is that you are saying. And I said to a couple, I said, now, didn't your son know? Weren't there some signs that this woman was narcissistic after they described her? And she said, yeah, the first night he came home, when he met her, he said, you know, I met this real cute girl, but she believes that she's the center of the universe. What should have been his first clue that this isn't going to go very well? I know she was cute, she was probably bubbly, she was probably very engaging, lots of fun, as narcissists often are, but she believes she's the center of the universe. It's like a t-shirt that a woman was wearing the other day that said, it's all about me. Or the t-shirt I saw on Wells Street just across the way when somebody says, just worship me and we'll get along fine. That's all you have to do. Because you exist for them. You are narcissistic supply. So here's what life is like if you married a narcissist. And I have no doubt but that some of you have. Remember, 10% of people. How many people are in your row sitting here, you know? Count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Turn to somebody next to you and say, you could be a narcissist. Let me tell you what life is like. And this is not from experience, because my dear wife, Rebecca, is one of the most selfless people one could possibly imagine. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Praise God for that. Now, the guy that she lives with, well, that's another story. I'll tell you about narcissists, because I know a little bit about them. And our daughter is a counselor, and she encounters them all the time. And she actually wrote a paper, and some of my ideas are from her paper. What is self-love like in a home? First of all, they have their own reality. They have their own reality. You see, truth to a narcissist is something he has to dispense of if it gets in the way of his ego and what he wants to do. They have their own reality. And sometimes you think that you've agreed with them about something and you have a meeting of the minds, and then you discover that they took the truth and they turned it a half turn, and suddenly it comes out as something very different than you agreed on. And you begin to say to yourself, am I crazy or are they crazy? I thought that we agreed on this. Filled with self-justification. And so they have their own reality. They have no feelings. No feelings. This is what actually led me to preach this message, is because, remember, Paul says their consciences are cauterized. The book of Ephesians says in the Old King James that they are past feeling. Chapter 4 of Ephesians, it also says now in my translation, callous. You must remember, they have no feelings for those whom they hurt. They don't even, if they're abusers, they don't even hear the cry of this little boy saying, no, daddy, daddy, don't beat me. They don't hear that. And at the same time, they feel their own pain very keenly, very keenly. I think one of the best examples of narcissism in the Bible is Cain. You know, Adam and Eve, they raised Cain. And Cain kills his brother Abel, and God says, you're going to be a fugitive. And you're going to be a fugitive in the land, but nobody will kill you. I'll put a mark on you. And Cain begins to cry and say, if anyone finds me, they're going to kill me. Oh, pass the Kleenex, Cain. Let's give them out at the door so that we can all cry. You just murdered your brother Abel. And now you're complaining about the fact that somebody may kill you and that you have to be a fugitive. There are people in this world who will stab you and leave you bleeding alongside of the road and walk away feeling sorry for themselves. That's narcissism. Why? Because they are past feeling, as the Bible says. Also, if they admit to something, occasionally a narcissist will admit to something, but he'll minimize it. Okay, I messed up. I had an affair, so I'm sorry. Let's move on. No sense of the depth of the pain that he caused, no sense of the hurt, because all that he cares about is, let's get this over with and let me confess superficially, because whatever I did isn't that big a deal. So it's always minimized. There's something else, and that is that they see people entirely as good or evil. Here's what will happen. A narcissist will marry this woman, and he will just adore her. You know, you're the greatest thing in the world. I can't believe that I married you, yada, yada, yada. Then she will not meet his expectations. She will not supply what his ego needs. And now, instead of working through the difficulty, now he demonizes her. She's the worst possible person. Everything that she does is wrong. I know that I'm throwing this in. We're giving you some extra stuff. But if you ever are in a divorce with a narcissist and you say to yourself, well, you know, okay, I'll give her the house. I'll give her this just so that we can have peace. What you'll discover is that that is not enough, because what she wants is to destroy you. She wants to destroy you. And you must understand that. That's why I was so interested in that word in 2 Timothy. Never saw it before this week. Unappeasable, unappeasable. And they begin to see the evil that is in them as belonging to you. So they lie, they manipulate. And they use their emotions to come up with truth. So they don't need facts. They know who's against them. They know their paranoia as to who it is that's after them. They know the evil that other people have done. What are your facts? I don't have any. I just know it. What interesting people they are. Well, you say, Pastor Luther, enough of that. What are we to do about it? Let me give you a prescription, and then we're going to turn to the scriptures, of course, which has the answer to human need. And as always, God is the one who has the answer. First of all, a couple of practical words. If you know anything about narcissism and you're living with a person like this, would you just take a deep breath and remember that they too have a story? They have a story. And you and I must have the patience to listen to their story. Probably abused, probably a sense of abandonment when they were young, probably maybe an alcoholic home. And so this self-protection, this godhood that we've spoken about begins to take over. And that may be the cause. Let us remember. And let us remember also that no matter how much evil they do, that there's more to them than simply the evil. They are human beings, and we need to minister to them and help them as such. But also, and I'm just being very practical here, having lived a little longer than some of you, though I wouldn't even begin to think about me being as old as one person I see back there. Don't have high expectations. If you have company over and they're happy, that is to say your spouse is happy and enjoying it, after the company leaves, they may suddenly and without reason turn into anger, control, criticism. And you say to yourself, who did I really marry? Was it this person we were just having fun with? Or is it the person who turned so violently angry after the company left? Because remember, a narcissist doesn't have to be good, that's for sure. But they certainly have to look good.
Well, my friend, we certainly are complex human beings, aren't we? This is Pastor Lutzer. The reason I took the time to discuss narcissism is because I notice that oftentimes people are narcissistic. And I feel sorry for those in marriages and in families and in work relationships where they have people, perhaps about 10% of the population is like this, who really are full-blown narcissists. And they aren't easy people to love. But here's the good news. In this series of messages, what I want to do is to give people hope, to remind them of the fact that God knows all about their circumstances. He understands those whom we live with, those whom we work with, those who we go to church with. And we need to be confident that in the midst of those pressures, that God is there to help us. So, as we continue this study, phone your friends. Tell them to listen to Running to Win.
Erwin Lutzer with more of Becoming That Impossible Person, the third in a 10-part series on the power of a clear conscience. Next time, why a narcissist needs a great deal of the grace of God. This series will be sent on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about the power of a clear conscience. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.